I think Sid Frost is like a magical thing, right? So I think it did what it had to do, but then the question is, can the next, 100 million user do Sid Frost? I don't think so. We can debate on it.
What is up, you beautiful people? Welcome back to another episode of Built on Bitcoin, where we talk with the best founders building across the entire Bitcoin ecosystem. And I take a very open mind of what that entails. So today, I have a great conversation with Louis Ivan, who is the CEO and co-founder of Rider. Rider is a new kind of hardware wallet that's really rethinking a lot of these things from first principles to build a wallet that's a pleasure to use, obviously still focused on security, but is focused on adopting and bringing in the next 100 million, 500 million, billion users, the normal person that isn't going to, hold on to a 12-word, 24-word seed phrase and make it much more easier to recover across different devices using some of the latest tech. And so they have a hardware wallet, they have an iPhone app, and they have this NFC security chip that you can use to spread out your keys and recover them in a safe way. We cover a ton. I was really interested about why even build hardware, which isn't very common in the crypto space. Everyone's doing protocols and tokens, and they decided to do the hard thing and build a new hardware wallet. So we talk about that. We talk about what Rider is, who is its focus for, how does this recovery option work, because there is no seed phrases, and a bunch of other topics. So without further ado, let me give you this fantastic conversation with Louis Ivan, CEO of Rider.
Welcome to Built on Bitcoin.
Louis, how are you doing today, my man?
Good, man. I'm doing good, actually. Busy.
It seems like it. You guys have been doing a ton in the past couple of weeks, and we've known about each other for a while because we both kind of started in this Stacks ecosystem, and then we both kind of branched out since then and gone different paths. But excited to talk. Really excited about what you guys are building with Rider. Let's start with your background. I want to get to know you a little bit more. So, give the people a little bit of a background of, who you are and how you got into crypto slash Bitcoin.
Perfect. So, hi guys, my name is Louis. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Rider. So, just a bit of background. I spent 4 years of my career at Stacks for, and then after that, back in 2016 is like where my crypto journey started. So just a bit of context. I think like everybody else, I started as a speculator. You knew about Bitcoin, knew about Ethereum and Monero. I only knew it as magic internet money. For me, it was so hard to grasp it more than anything else. And the narrative back then was just cryptocurrency. And fast forward 2017, it became like ICO, like decentralized this, decentralized that. The top 10 in coin market cap was way different back then, right? And then for me, of course, it became like, okay, you're gonna earn money of it. It's like the normal journey. You lost money, I lost money, same thing. But then what got me hooked was I was studying my master's back then, but I specialized on green IT. But then I had a course on digital culture. So for me, I tried to understand when was the first digital community was created, why did it fail? I tried to understand what's the difference between the platforms that was created on Web 2.0 and how can we fix it. I took a very deep dive on the economic and social aspect of technology. And for me, I uncovered that, oh, it's like walled gardens. You can't really take your stuff and put it on another platform. They actually extort value from user and then it's become like a capitalist kind of thing. And for me, the conclusion was always you need a shift in the technology to actually break this, right? You can turn it into the rules of majority instead of being the rules of minority. And at some point, I came across the TED Talk of Muneeb. I think it was 2018. He was talking about a new internet. I was like, okay, this is the guy. When it's like love at first sight, I was like, yes, I want to work for this guy. And I'm just going to do whatever it takes to work for that guy, because he had the same thesis that you as a user could actually capture value on the things that you create online and then use it. And for me, that was my thesis on what I wrote for my study. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to work for this guy. Then fast forward to 2018, it was called Blockstack back then. And they weren't hiring. I looked at the hiring process. So I was like, yeah, these guys are from Princeton. Like, how can I get my foot at the door? It's very tough. They're like Ivy League school. Meanwhile, me, I'm still studying. You know, I did like, you know, when you're a generalist, you did a lot of things, but you never specialize on anything. Mm-hmm. That's me. You know, I work for a healthcare startup being data analyst. I work as a business analyst in a software architecture startup. I did a lot of things. I work as a .NET developer, but I'm not the best. I'm okay. You know, but I can execute very well. I think that's like one of my best traits. So what I did was, of course, they wanted to take a look at my CV. I already know it. I sent Patrick back then, the head of growth at Blockstack, and message. They were like, on them, just like community. I told him, yo, Patrick, I can help you grow Blockstack. Here's a pitch deck. I remember the exact line that he said. Okay, I'm going to unwrap the onion slit. I was like, what is it? Is it a jargon for Americans? Or is it a metaphor? I don't really know. I just need to wait. And then it's like, yeah, we're not really hiring, you know, but like you can be a community member and contribute. And for me, I was like, yeah, you don't need to pay me. I can do anything. So I started designing posters. You know, then they're like, they really loved it. I started doing meetups. I'm just there. I think 4 months later, they're like, oh, we want to contract you. And that changed for me everything. You know, it was my journey. And then I think in the beginning, it's very hard because the learning curve in crypto, you need a lot of patience for it, right? Like, for example, proof of transfer, I read it 6 times before I get it. I was just putting it out there. It's not like you read it one bit and then you understand it. The Bitcoin blockchain, I read it so many times because it was just, you know, it's very hard to understand, right? And then 4 years later, I was leading Growth at the Foundation. You know, I remember the days where we do meetups, there was 4 people, and now we're holding like conferences with like 500, 600 people in it. And then I thought, okay, my job is done. You know, Stacks became the number one Web3 project on Bitcoin. I worked on the protocol for years. Now I want to do something that I'm more passionate about. That's why we started writing. That's my story. A bit long, but
dude,
yeah.
So much. And I can definitely attest to your execution for one. Cause I remember when I first got into Stacks, I was like, dude, this Lewis guy is freaking everywhere. He's like in the Discords. He's doing this. He's doing that. He's on Twitter. So it's like, I swear before AI was like a thing, you had like an AI agent just like floating around. But, and I also remember I saw the Blockstack like release. They did like a hype reel, like a 2-minute video. And it was, you watch it and you're like, yeah, we do deserve a better internet. This is what we need. It was reminiscent of the like the 1984 like Apple video where it's like they throw it on the screen. It like had that impact on me. But there's something you said about digital culture. And I want to touch on this for a second because I've been thinking through. When you look at social media, it's promised as like a way to connect with people. Like you could talk to your grandma. It makes tools that makes it easier to connect. The problem is that the tools are being used not optimally. And so people are it's easier to connect, but we're not connecting using these tools at like a deeper level. So there's this weird disconnect between ability to connect and feeling connected when it comes to social media. And I'm wondering, I feel like there's something there in Web3 where we have the ownership piece and tokenization, and that's interesting for being able to own a piece of a community. But it seems like there's also this dance of, because everything is financialized, everything becomes transactional. And so we haven't grown past that yet to blend those as a community. And it's too focused on the money part and not the culture part. So I'm just curious, because you've thought about this, I'm curious of your take on that idea.
No, it's good. So let me give you. So in my study, the first digital community was actually from the Netherlands, and it's called the Digital Stat. And they have more than 100,000 people in it. They just go online on this online forum, and they try to just communicate with others because they felt like they belong. And they all had these little avatars. But the biggest problem that they had back then was, how do we monetize the community? You know, and the servers were getting expensive. It was like in the early 90s, you know, .com, and they couldn't figure it out. you know, but then you've fast forwarded 2023. Now you all have these communities that actually race through tokens. You know, even before they had 100,000 community members, they even need less. Probably the most famous collections have like 1,000 people that owns, you know, 10,000, this 10,000 PFPs, right? But then there's a mismatch when it comes to alignment. So back then, you already have the product market fit, 100K people interacting with each other on a community platform. That's great signal for product market fit. The difference now is I think the incentives came too early. So you look at these people raise fuck a ton of money. There's no product market fit. And I'm going to be honest, I think that's like one of the biggest mistakes of the space, and we see it more and more now. But I think now you and I, even with our investors, are getting more sophisticated. If they see a BS, they see it as a BS, right? But before, it was like crypto casino of the Wild West, raise money, create this, create that. But then by the end of the day, you can't sustain that in the long run because everything is built on quicksand. And there's a misalignment when it comes to incentive.
So on that topic then, I mean, we'll get to Ryder, I promise, but this is so interesting to me. The current accepted kind of like vernacular is how good a community is doing, say for an NFT project, is floor price. So it's like if the Mad Lads flip the gods, then Mad Lads is something to be a part of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which seems like a very improper metric to use for a proxy for an engaged community. So what's a better metric? Like if we're using that because it's tangible, is it because it's hard to measure that this is so difficult? Or what would you track if you're looking for a pulse of a community?
Yeah, I think more traditional, right? I think if you look at organizations in the past, they're actually, for example, okay, let's go back to, I think history is always good as a reference, right? Like how does organizations or clubhouse actually make money and become sustainable, right? So for them, it's all about having that healthy kind of revenue through memberships, you know, inviting more people in, and then they just have a really good, healthy revenue with the new minus all their expenses, they're good as a business. And I think that's what should those NFT communities do as well, right? Like you raise tons of money, now you think of ways, okay, how can we actually maximize the revenue from this money that we raise in order to actually be sustainable in the 10-year long plan so that we can actually execute all the things that we want to execute. By the end of the day, you made an NFT project because you want to do something. Unless you made it for the same reason, oh, we want to be like, you know, the highest floor price, which I think maybe it's a good mission for other people, but not for, I don't think it's for you. I don't think it's for me. We went to crypto for the main reason that, you know, you see there's an opportunity that you want to fix in society. And that's why we went on the space, right? Because you felt like, oh, we could actually change something.
Yep, totally agree. Okay, and let's step back into the conception of Ryder. So I want to be placed in, you've been working at the foundation for a few years, you know, you're growing that, Stacks is doing well, mm-hmm. and you're starting to get the inklings of like, I want to do something else.
Yeah,
you've met some talented engineers. Marvin is one of them. You're the CTO. But the natural thing that people do is go into software because software is easier. Like code is easier to ship, and you guys go the harder route of doing a hardware wallet. So talk to me about the early days of like making that decision and like what went into like it, you seeing that gap in the market.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just always curious, right? I think for me, what excites me the most in life is, you know, life is all about you do things that you haven't done before, right? And then you're always forever learning. And for me, if I'm going to do hardware, that means I haven't done it. You know, there's like a room for me to grow. I want to learn more about the e-commerce thing. You know, how do you actually make products from concept all the way to mass production? That's something that I haven't done. I don't want to move to like a different protocol and do the same thing. It's not for me. But then I was just very lucky because then Marvin came up with the idea. So when it was Blockstack back then, he can actually see the private keys on the browser. And it's like, yeah, I can see these private keys, and privacy is everything. Once you take it, you lose everything, right? From you. And and then that's how we met. He told me, oh, do you want to do this thing with me? I'm like, yeah, like you said, I'm in a very comfortable position. You know, I worked so hard to get here, and then I'm going to leave now. I don't think it makes sense. I can't risk it. So I told him, maybe just come back to me in like, you know, a few weeks. If you have a prototype, then I'm more than happy to take a look at it, because he wanted to do it with me somehow. And then he came back a few weeks. This guy is real, you know, and from then on, we haven't even met, actually. I thought, like, okay, I have some guys I can actually help incorporate the company in Singapore. So then, yeah, we incorporated it. And that was the beginning. And then it was more so like a sidekick, because I think the last thing that you want to do as founders is to just try to make the end meets, right? And I always tell Marvin, I think for me, you know, let's figure this out, work on it slowly, you know, just like try to understand it from the whole concept rather than just jumping right straight through. Because the last thing that I want is for us to be struggling. So we spent 1 year to just like doing pure R&D. And then by the time that we were ready, we're like, okay, we're ready. And that's when we jump in full time.
Love it. Love it. So the catalyst was private key management. I'm assuming this was focused on Stack specifically initially, or that was like trying to make Stacks more secure.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, he can see he wrote a blog about it, and you guys can search it. Just like exporting private keys in the Blockstack browser.
It's very bad, actually. So
if you think about it now, it's very bad.
Well, I'm intrigued now, because the if you have that end goal, like private key management's not where it should be, you could end up somewhere like a cold card, which, you know, they have like this calculator type thing that's super secure, and it solves the job. But Ryder ends up somewhere much closer to, you know, you're wading into much more difficult problems of like usability, UX, you know, who's the end user. So like, once you have this target of like trying to make things secure and you can hold your wallet, it grew from that, it seems. So like, what's that path look like of how the idea evolved over time?
Yeah, so you have the basic idea of, okay, decentralized identity, right? And then self-sovereign identity, that was always the pitch for us. So if you look at Ryder in the beginning, I think the pitch was so unsexy. We're like, yeah, it's a modular device for self-sovereign identity. Now I hear myself, I cringe, right? And I think that's what you do as an author. You just learn and then iterate on the messaging. I don't think your first messaging is going to be like the last one. Even up until now, we're trying to make it better every day. But now we pitch it. It's like the first ever wallet that combines security, simple setup, and easy recovery. Now there's something that people in the space would understand. But then if you go back to like the real world, it's like a different kind of messaging again to our mom, right? For me, I think the catalyst was, okay, I've been at the protocol level for 4 years. Marvin has been there since 2014, 2013. He worked on various projects like OpenSea, you know, taking it to multi-chain with like Kotlin and Polygon. But the biggest question that I had is, okay, Stacks at the bull run was $3 billion, right? But then for me, I couldn't grasp it that, okay, you have Decentraland, you have Stacks, you have all these protocols, but none of them has a million user. Not. And all of the market caps were ridiculous. Like, it didn't make sense for me, right? But then for me, I went to the space because of a few things. The ideals, you know, decentralization, sovereignty, you know, those are, I believe it's almost permissionless. But then why is it so difficult for my friends and family, our family, to just like jump into Web3? Why? I don't get it, you know? So for us, it was always a combination of, okay, you want to do software, that means it was always going to be hardware, be your own bank. Like, you can't breach decentralized and you don't have a full stack of decentralized economy from like software to hardware. Then the next thing is, okay, user experience, hardware plus software. That's like how we came with a thesis. You know, we need better onboarding when it comes to self-custody.
I love it. I love the idea of thinking from the first principles, especially from the end user. Because it's something I'm trying to think about a lot lately of like, especially as an investor, you need to see where the puck is going. And there's this narrative that Bitcoin's going to go through this journey of money, of store value to minimum exchange to unit of account. And it seems like it's going to do that. That's how money progresses. But the thing that people keep missing in my mind is that store value is it's the first step for sure. But most people don't save money. Like they live paycheck to paycheck globally. And so the idea of storing your wealth is not something on their radar. It's almost by definition for like the upper echelon of people that are like doing better financially. So under that rubric, like how do you attract them to hold Bitcoin? I don't know. It's a big open question. Like you have to make it effortless. You have to make it easy to go from asset to asset so they can go from stables to Bitcoin and they can choose what risk profile they want to sit in. Like I want to hold my dollars and have my bank account stay exactly what it is, or I want upside. But even from a wallet perspective, like the seed phrase is that it's a big invention over the private key, but it's nowhere near good enough to adopt, you know, the first million and the next billion. So like talk to me about the seed phrase, because in the Bitcoin community, it's like the gold standard. It's like you hold these 12 or 24 words and you have everything you need to say, screw the government, fuck off, you know, this is mine. But you guys have gotten something different, and like you never see the seed phrase if you don't want to, and you're still secure. So yeah, talk to us about that.
I think seed phrase is like a magical thing, right? So I think it did what it had to do, but then the question is, can the next, you know, 100 million user do seed phrase? I don't think so. You know, we can debate on it, but I don't think so. Like, that's like my honest take on it. So for us, it was always, okay, let's interview various people in their customer journey and just like try to understand, let's go back to the drawing board, what are the actual problems that they're struggling with? And it was always user onboarding. You know, I've heard, so we interviewed like around 54 people. And then with these 54 people, they tried to tell them, okay, yeah, you know, I know hardware wallets, I know self-custody, but I never really get into it because it's just time to show me, you know? And then the other one was like, why do I even have to write that 24 words? You already lost me. And this pattern is just reoccurring. I even have friends that, they bought hardware wallets, but they never installed it. I did the same, actually. I bought hardware wallets way before. I just bought it because I think, oh, I need to secure it. But I never installed it because it was just, I don't know. There's something about it that's too intimidating and too difficult. Mm-hmm. And for us, okay, we have a really good skill set here. What if we solve all of these problems? And that's what we try to do with Rider. We went on like the user journey and just like, okay, what is the best solution that we can do with it? And for us, it got a bit inspired by Apple Pay, right? And then also design decision. In terms of design decision, if you look at Rider, 100% portless, no Wi-Fi, no Bluetooth. So that means there's no block box. And when you have simplicity in architecture like Bitcoin, you have security, right? So, and for us, it's just NFC. LED screen, secure element, MCU, that's it. And then the next thing is, okay, now that you have this kind of near-field communication, if you look at it, Apple Pay has like one of the biggest adoption when it comes to technology in general. It's because you have the kind of like frictionless experience. What if you can bring the same frictionless experience to Web3? You know, something that users are already familiar with the kind of environment. Vitalik wrote a really good blog about it, and I always refer to it. He always say wallets will succeed based on three criteria. You try to remove the single point of failure, and the single point of failure is always seed phrases.
Really?
You know, and then the next one is, he said, okay, the second criteria is low mental head effort. Like, I shouldn't put so much mental head effort to create a wallet. That's never gonna happen. You know, you can't expect people to just do that. And then the third thing that he said is maximum ease of transaction. How can you bring the same backing experience to a wallet?
It's interesting with the seed phrases too, because like holding one seed phrase is like pretty, it's straightforward. You just write your words down. But every time you go to a new ecosystem, you have to hold a new seed phrase. And so like for me, just to maintain coverage across Bitcoin, I have like 7 seed phrases for like rootstock and for stacks and for, and it's like, it becomes a burden where I'm like, I hope I have all 7. I hope they're okay. But yeah, putting this all together, like we've danced around a bunch of different topics, but lay out like, what is Rider?
So Rider is a hardware wallet that combines security, simple setup, and easy recovery. So we actually do this by cryptographically securely splitting your wallet into multiple pieces. So for example, you need your writer one, it splits the wallet pieces to the recovery tag and then the mobile application and optionally your social circle. And by using our own weighted implementation of Shamir, you can actually have various ways to recover your asset. So for example, the threshold is 4, your mobile application count as 2, and the recovery tag act as 2. Now you need at least 4 to recover your asset. So that means the recovery tag mobile application can come and your social circle count as 1. So meaning 4 of your social circle could actually recover your asset into a new writer one. So that's kind of how it works.
Got it. Okay, hold on. You covered that too quickly. I didn't fully grasp it. So I want to make sure people know because people know seed phrase as well, and they understand single point of failure. And so they're by definition saying, I trust myself. Maybe they shouldn't. That's a bigger topic. Yeah. So what you guys are doing with this weighted Shamir secret sharing, and it seems like it's moving into either you're bringing in some level of trust, whether it's social trust or some other third party. I just want to make sure that's really clear. So like, help me understand the pieces that move here, whether it's storing my seed phrase on iCloud or the NFC tag thing or my friends. Like, help me break down the pieces here so I understand it clearly.
Yeah, so instead of using the seed phrase, we cryptographically split the wallet pieces into what we call recovery tag. And this recovery tag are NFC battery-free tags that are ultra-resistant to dust and water and can retain data at 25 years. And then the next one is we put one of the pieces on your phone, right? So all of these three things work together, and we call that tap-safe recovery to recover your asset. Now, security is different for everyone. It's different for you. It's different for me. It's different for Marvin. Right. It's definitely different from the maxis. The maxis only they trust themselves, you know?
Yeah.
So, but for me, I'm a normal user and I trust my parents. Like my mom, for example, she has 3 of my seed phrases, you know, and I just keep it in LA because she lives in LA. And then I have one with my best friend. And I have one in Amsterdam. It's just like all over scattered. So for me, okay, what can I do to actually make it easier for people like me that's normal? I'm not saying that maxis are normal. So for us, that's why we created social circle. Because then imagine if my mom could just install the mobile application. And then by simply tapping my writer to her phone, I could give her a backup. That's something that normal people would do. And that's something that we want to bring to the space. But then for example, a guy like Marvin, he wants all his trusted devices. So what Marvin can do is he can create as many backups as he wants by buying more recovery tags. And he can, as much as he wants, 100 either, you know, to actually back up his router.
Got it. Okay. So there's a 3-part kind of like triangle here. You have the router device, which is like the home base of everything. And then you have a smartphone wallet, and I'm assuming you guys support iPhone and Android, so that you have full coverage there?
Yeah, an NFC-compatible device. So as long as you have an NFC device on your phone, it's there.
Got it. Okay. And then the third piece is the recovery tag.
Yeah.
And those together allow you to split up your pieces or shards of your secret key. This is mainly for recovery though, right? Like when it comes to spending, does this change at all? Like, do you just need the writer and the phone when you're spending?
You just need the writer, because then your private keys never leaves the device, right? It's just on the secure element. So your writer one, okay, remove your backups now. You just need your writer, right? But then in the future, we have it on our own, like called smart wallet, but it's still far ahead, right? But then we can think of ways, okay, how do you envision a smart wallet? Do you bring your writer or do you use the mobile application? Maybe a good way is because people already have their mobile app, writer app. You can use your writer to just like put the limit. Okay, I want to put like a 5K limit on my writer wallet on my phone. Boom. Then you can use this as a POS to actually pay with crypto in, you know, in a shop, for example. I think there will also maybe other scenario where you use your hardware wallet to do XYZ, you know, but I think it's too early to tell, but then we have various theses for it.
Got it. Okay. I love it. That's super interesting. So for the, like, who's the ideal customer here? Because if I look at, like, the landscape of hardware wallets or seed phrase management, I guess is one way to look at it, too, is, like, you got people stamping their seed phrase on metal and, like, burying it in a bunker. And that's, like, that's the extreme Fort Knox, you know, maxi version. Yeah. And no one in the right mind is doing that unless you're storing, you know, Michael Saylor money. And then on the opposite spectrum, you have, like, maybe a hot browser wallet or something. Mm-hmm. And there's a big spectrum in the middle. So, like, where do you see Ryder on those spectrums? And, like, who is the ideal customer that would benefit a lot from, like, getting a Ryder one?
Yeah. So, for us, we have, like, a long-term target market, right? I think if I onboarded my mom and she's doing self-custody, my mission at Ryder, done. But then the question is, okay, short customer persona, GTM strategy is... Let's for example, we have Jacob. Jacob is actually concerned about the security of his digital asset. He finds traditional hardware wallet very difficult to use. Third, Jacob wants a more intuitive and user-friendly way to manage his digital asset because he finds the current one more complex. So that's kind of like the customer profile of who we are targeting for Ryder in the beginning at the moment. So
Okay. Very, very cool. Very cool. And then when it comes to supported blockchains, like, you know, everyone has their thesis. Some people are ETH, everyone is becoming SOL now. Well, obviously this podcast is very Bitcoin focused, but even in Bitcoin, like, because it's so fragmented, like, L1 is usually supported. You guys will probably support Stacks given your background, but then beyond that, like, Rootstock, Liquid, Lightning, like, these branch out pretty quickly. So, you know, what do you support currently, and, like, what's kind of your roadmap, or how you see the expansion plan for that?
So fun. I got this question three times, I think, today. And so in terms of, you know, I work in this space for so long, I think some of the projects are here to stay, some aren't, right? And now it's all about, okay, chain sequencing. If you as a company, which chain do you prioritize? I think the biggest ones are always there. I'm a multi-chain guy, you know it. I love this particular phrase from Marvin because he said, we should build bridges and not islands. I think some of the people in the space, they're very territorial. If you're like Solana, full-blown Solana, if you're Ethereum, full-blown Ethereum. But then I go back to my study again, right? I think that's one of the things that crypto tries to prevent. But at the end of the day, I think the mission was always you can easily exit this protocol and go to another protocol. And that's like the vision of crypto. Like, you have so many choices. And for us, it was always, okay, now we prioritize, we support Bitcoin. Happy to say it here. And then we also announced support for Solana, Polygon, Ethereum at the beginning. And then from then on, it's all about, okay, which protocol has the best community? You know, the community wants to get integrated and then we take it from there. But we support the biggest L1s that you can think of at upon launch.
Got it. I mean, that definitely makes sense from, like, an adoption curves going where the users are. You didn't mention Stacks on there. Is that just a given, or do you guys have Stacks on the roadmap?
It's somewhere in the roadmap.
I guess one thing we didn't touch on, because we talked a lot about, like, secret key, like, key management, UX, which you guys are really, like, blazing a new trail on. Like, there'll be links below. People should definitely watch how this works because it's so much easier than what people are used to. So you have to kind of see it to really grok the idea. But the other one is that you actually have a really good looking device with a nice screen, which brings in this other component of digital art, NFTs, collectors. It can almost take the place of, like, an Apple Watch I could see people having, where it's like it becomes like a social status thing. So talk to me about that piece, which is, like, you know, the screen is not just functional for typing in things. It can display things. So go into that a little bit.
Yeah, because, okay, let's break it down. So for the device, we did over 50 iterations on it, right? So if you can see closely, so this one is polycarbonate, and then you have the aluminum back here. So then for us, okay, how do you actually combine security and usability when it comes to the materials that you chose for the device? And usability is about soft, right? It's supposed to be something more, what do you call this, approachable. So you can't use something like heavy metal on it. So for us, okay, it's like a polycarbonate. You put this little lining on writer. And then, okay, how do you scream strong, robust? You know, because those are the characteristics of Harbor Wallet. That's why we chose aluminum on it. So now you combine both, and then you have what Rider stands for, which is combining the two most sort of feature in the space, which is usability and security. Then in terms of the screen as well, because okay, there's no Harbor Wallet out there that does like a full OLED display, but of course it becomes like design decision. Some of them didn't do it because of X, right? So for us, we wanted to do it because we saw this burst in like the NFT community, you know, and then you can actually predict, okay, crypto consumers in like the next 3 to 5 years, we're going to bet on that they would want to use their NFTs to flex. You know, that's what we want for like an OLED display.
Very cool. I love it. You're covering all the bases where people can use it however they see fit. If they want to flex, they can flex. If they want to keep it secure, they can keep it secure. If you want to make it easy to use, you got that covered. So you're crossing a lot of the boxes. So for people that are hearing this, then like they're intrigued, they want to try a different wallet. Like if they want to get involved and like pick up one, where can they get one? How much is it? Is it currently live? Like drop the date.
Yeah, so we're live on Kickstarter. You can also pre-order Rider now on Kickstarter, and then we're going to ship on April. So that's like kind of the TLDR for Rider.
Perfect. Okay. Well, man, we covered an absolute S-ton. I'm super excited about what you guys are building. Yeah. I guess a couple of just like more broad questions like to bring this home. What, and this could be abroad, like across the entire ecosystem or just in your general life, like what are you most excited about right now? And it could be with Rider, it could be in the space overall. You know, what are you stoked about right now?
Super stoked. Okay. Yeah, I think so with you and I, okay, I'm going to stick to crypto. You and I have been in crypto space for so long, but I think the narrative is shifting. The protocols are being more friendly. You can see protocols are like trying to work together. You know, tribalism is like kind of becoming dead. And then I love the shift in narrative as well when it comes to Bitcoin. Usually you all have these people that just like scream so loud on Bitcoin and they have a certain thesis for it. And like, bro, you know, it's like, where do you live? And then now it's just like, I think it's coming back there. I think for me, the change in the space when usually in the bear market, it's like, oh, maybe crypto is not for me, you know, but the builders are here to stay. You see a lot of innovation. And for me, that's what I like the most, because now I think you're going to see in the next 3 to 5 years, okay, which are the companies this bear market actually like, you know, took a home run for it, because they were there to build, they stayed, and, you know, they fought through it.
I guess the last broad question, is there anything, again, we covered a shit ton. Is there any topic that I didn't touch on, that you wanna shed some light on and discuss?
Not really. I think everything was like pretty clear. We, you know, I think next time will be nice to jump on like the design decision with like the other co-founder or like even Julian, because they put a lot of effort on it. I think having them to go on stage and talk about, you know, hardware startups, how to de-risk it, what are like the common risks, because it's not really a thing that's being shown in Web3, like. You know, what's Web3 hardware startup? There's like a few out there. So I think it's time that we make it more accessible so people know how to navigate the situation.
That's a really good point. Because like, yeah, at the Bitcoin Frontier Fund, which like you guys were a part of in cohort 2, you know, we try and give like, help people put them on game around like how to fundraise or like some of the common pitfalls of startup. But you don't see anything when it comes to like hardware.
Yeah,
especially in the Web3 space, it's just a black box, and you're just like, oh, here's the Solana phone, and here's Rider. Like, there's 10 companies doing this, and no one's talking about like inside baseball for the most part. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I agree. That would be super interesting. Well, fantastic, Lewis. This has been great. Real quick, drop us the obligatory links for people that want to follow you, follow Rider, all that.
Okay, cool. So you guys can look at me at like and Twitter, Lewis Ivan BP. And if you want to check out Writer, it's just writer.id. That's it.
Perfect. Well, I almost called you Writer. Lewis, thank you for coming on.
Good branding.
Yeah, I know. It's just, we're fused together, you know? Yeah, this has been fantastic. I'm super excited about a Writer. I'm a backer. I'm excited to get mine.
No, thank you. Thank you.
But yeah, thank you for coming on the show, man. This has been great.
Cheers, man. Thank you.
Thank you for listening this far into the episode. If you found it enjoyable, please do like, subscribe on whatever platform that you're listening on. YouTube does me a huge favor to like and subscribe. Find me on Twitter at Jake Blockchain. Show me some love. I reply to every DM. And if you are a Bitcoin builder that is kind of at the forefront of building new use cases, whether it's L1, Lightning, Stacks, Rootstock, Rollups, Ordinals, BRC20, I want to talk to you. So when I'm not doing this podcast, I am the sourcing partner at the Bitcoin Frontier Fund, where we invest in Bitcoin startups at the earliest stages, give you access to whatever you need, whether it's legal, product, fundraising help, as well as capital. So love to talk to you. You can hit me up again. Find me on Twitter at Jake Blockchain and shoot me a DM. I'll read everything. Love to talk to you guys. All right. Peace.
Welcome to Built on Bitcoin. I know that things don't always go your way, but I'll be right.